All right. How's everybody doing today?
Good.
How you doing?
Excellent. We're already in October. Can you believe that? Basically, one more day. Incredible to me how fast time is flying by.
We've got a big plan for September. We're not done yet. We're in the car business. This is
one more day. Funny. Well, why don't we start the teleclass out with winds that you guys might have experienced over the last couple of weeks.
Wind,
struggle, whatever. Yeah, go ahead.
I got a win and a struggle. So for me, a win was using some of the work structuring tools and getting some really good clarity and alignment out of the retreat last week. Sitting down, mapping out what my thoughts over the next Q4 were, and then being able to present it to the group and get some really good feedback and make some adjustments. I just feel like really, really good about it, you know, a good sense of direction and alignment, and I take that as a really good win. Struggle to post to the e-journal, which is such a simple thing that I just, you know, I kick myself in the ass that I haven't done a better job at. So I am hereby making a committed action to post, and you guys are going to get sick of me, and you're going to think, what is this guy doing? No, but I really, the thing that I've struggled with is trying to be too polished and perfect, and how's it going to land, and I still just got to get it out there. And so that's me making a commitment to the group that I'm going to post more this week.
So in the spirit of committed action, what does more mean?
I will.
Once, twice, three times.
Lady? I'm gonna get two posts in, two at mediocre posts.
All right, so two journal posts in before the end of this week?
Animated, good.
It's running. It's just get the cycles. One of the things I struggle with, but yep. Two posts out of me this week, guaranteed.
Okay. Great. I appreciate that. I appreciate the recommitment to the e-journal. Anybody else?
It's Ramon. I'm going to match Jeremy two posts. I'm gonna definitely match it, because that is definitely something that is a struggle, and I think Steve just said, don't let perfect get in the way of good, and I think that's a revelation for me, is because wanting to make it to for it to be just right, and I think that's my hesitation as well. So I'm gonna definitely match Jeremy's post. That's my struggle, but my win. If I want to call it a win, is just being able to take time to prep and prepare, to help me see, my part of the business and how I impact and trying to make sure that, I'm getting my ducks in a row, so that I can, contribute to the team the way I need to. And I've been doing a lot of preparation and preparing. Jeremy and I taking time and just giving each other feedback on his preparation versus my preparation, and helping, you know, get more in line. So I say for me that was a win, is taking the time to work on the business. And balancing my time to work in the business, but preparation, taking a 5-minute prep, what would we call it, probably about, and 55 minutes of prep, preparation and then posting, that's my win and struggle.
Nice, thank you.
Peter, I'd say win is recently in the last week and a half, has been the communication that the purchasing department has had. We've had our struggles, but I think that we've done a real good job recently, and I guess sharing the joy. And we don't each need to be heroes. We just need to work together. And we've done a much better job. It's only been a week and a half, but we've been very good with communicating. We really have each other's back. We're each working together to get things done as opposed to working separately. So feel really good about that. I'm not going to match two posts. I'm just going to make sure I get one post before I can get to two. But I will commit to one, and I'm going to get that out today.
Thanks. Thank you.
Hey, guys. It's Vance. So I guess the win for me is just the awareness of, utilizing Sagan and, the tools and the things that we have at our hands to, in certain situations, especially upstairs, over the past couple of weeks. I know I shared with you guys some different issues with some people. I know one big thing was, intent versus impact, being able to recognize that and go back to some of my materials and use that to go back and have a better conversation and deliver the message that I was trying to land on these guys. But I think just, in general, it's the awareness for me, throughout the day now, in some cases whenever I'm, just have some dead time, being able to look at my phone and look what's important, look what's on my personal task matrix and say, what do I want to put my time today or with this next 30 minutes that I'm not doing anything. So that's been pretty good for me. But, I mean, same as you guys, really, really struggling with just getting, sharing my thoughts and getting my ideas and my struggles on the e-journal has been really, really difficult. I think I need to try putting that into my personal task matrix to see if I can deliver on that.
Nice. I'm going to address this e-journal theme that we've got going on here in a second, but I'll continue with wins and struggles for now.
This is Steve. I think Jeff and I got a year's worth of cycles of productive conflict in last week with one of the buyers. We went through every single tool in the toolbox. we were in the drama triangle for quite a bit, but Jeff did a far better job than I did, but at least I was aware of the shitty job I was doing, but I kept plugging along. But Jeff used a lot of inquiry and framing he used a lot. It didn't work because we had a victim, but it was actually the whole time I was actually more focused on the tools, just saying, all right, this is going to be a messy situation and probably not going to get resolved, so I might as well just pull out the tools and start just practice. And it was interesting, comical, unproductive, but I think somewhere along the line we got through it.
Nice.
But we certainly, I don't think, got anywhere with the individual, but we got some damn good practice in.
Okay.
This is Jeff. I think I share a slightly different perspective as ever. I think Steve's right. It was a process, and we did use every tool. I think people don't change, and I think that what our job is to try and get the best out of the resources we've got at the time, and while overlaying a plan to evolve and develop as a company to meet our targets. So, I think it's a kind of a case study of saying, hey, look, we're given all these tools. It's not so much that you reach a solution, but can you make progress and get the best out of the resources you got and marshal your soldiers to to effectively achieve the business objectives. So I don't know, I think it's I share a slightly more optimistic view than Steve. Not that we've changed the individual, but, you know, you take two steps forward, one step back, and as long as it's, you know, you're in general moving forward, and I remain surprisingly more optimistic, which is an unusual situation for me to be in, to be more optimistic than my colleagues. So, that's a slightly different perspective. I'm a little more optimistic than Steve on the progress we're making, but I don't think it will be consistent progress. I think we'll constantly have to reset and realign, and because I don't think we change the individual's fundamental, not just that individual, but in general.
Thanks. So, earlier, just a few minutes ago on the call, we talked about this e-journal. What do you, and there's a struggle to post, and I get the struggle, right, in terms of wanting to have a perfect post or wanting to have something really, really well thought out and built out, but what do you guys think the purpose of the e-journal is?
Hey, Rufus, Ramon. I think the purpose is to get our thoughts out there for group discussion and essentially seeking help for a fresh view of perspective. And generally, I think that's really what it's about, is just putting your thoughts out there, what your experiences are, and get the fresh view of perspective and see where it takes you.
Yeah, that's an interesting place to start. I definitely think it's about getting your perspective out there. You can ask for help if it's something you're struggling with. It is maybe about seeking other opinions, right? But it also could just be about, hey, this is something I learned, and I want you guys to hear about it or see it. And it's a way to sort of exchange lessons in a different format, right? But the burden of that e-journal sometimes can get lifted if you start to just shift the perspective of why you're even doing it.
This is Peter. I think another important thing is we have so many different things going on in our mind and so many different tasks and stuff. And I think it's just a way to kind of free up some bandwidth, get some stuff, you know, out of your mind that you're thinking of so you can focus on other things. It might be just one little thing, but if you're thinking about it, it's taking up a lot of bandwidth. So I think it's a good opportunity just to speak your mind and free up your mind a little bit to focus on other areas.
Yeah. One of the things that, you know, this is a technique that's used in therapy oftentimes, but when we have a fear about something, one of the things therapists actually offer the person to do is to lean into that fear to take away the power over you, right? So fear of rejection, what you do is you lean into that fear, go and get rejected 5 times a day, and the power of that rejection goes away. Not saying it's one for one here, but with the e-journal, if it's a fear of not having a perfect post or not having something perfectly kind of articulated, lean into that and post a messy, no punctuation, bullets only, whatever it is kind of post, just to take away the power that fear has over you, or that struggle has over you. Does that make sense?
Yeah, Ruth, Steve, coming at it in a similar way, this month I'm reading a lot about complaints and commitments, basically how they're basically two sides of the same coin, and complaints is obviously what you don't like, and commitments is basically what you stand for. And I think when you look at the e-journal reasons for posting, I think it's because we have a competing commitment
And that is, you know, from what I'm hearing from the group, is my competing commitment to posting on the e-journal is I'm committed to having a perfect post, or I'm committed to making appearing very smart, or I'm committed to really wordsmithing something correctly. And that, so I think a lot of the resistance that we have towards things is really about a competing commitment and why we don't do those things. So when we say is, why aren't we doing these things, if you just look at what's holding you back, it's usually there's an inside competing commitment in there. And again, I get the sense that everybody's committed to making a really, really great, well-articulated post, and that's what's holding us back. And I think if we understand that that's the commitment, the competing commitment to making a post, let's relax that commitment and say, you know what, I am no longer going to be committed for the next month to that competing commitment, that I'm going to relax that and be okay with just a messy post.
Nice, yeah. I'm a big fan of that framework of competing commitments and what's on the other side. What do we stand for versus the complaints that we are vocalizing, right?
Yeah.
It oftentimes helps to break down a lot of the things that consume our energy. All right. So we got a lot of committed action about posting this week, so I'll be watching the e-journal to see how that plays out. Part of the topic today was debriefing your retreat and then just kind of understanding what's up for you guys. What are some of the things you want to go deeper into? And in the request for the teleclass, I was specifically seeking or soliciting topics that you guys were interested in breaking down a little further. So with that, I'll open it up for you guys.
This is Jeremy Roop. I'd like to keep going with our productive conflict. That's just kind of, there's so many opportunities, you know, throughout the day, throughout the week, and for us to, you know, get some more reps in and practice and get better at how we manage conflict and how we really use it to our advantage is kind of in my mind.
Okay. Do you want to tee up something specific that you're wrestling with?
For me, I have a hard time really, you know, I heard Steve and Jeff talking about, you know, using all the tools, and it seems like in the moment I'm not as comfortable, like, thinking about my toolbox and which tool, you know, and then I go afterwards and I think, gosh, you know, I'll write it down, and maybe that's something I would be good fuel for a e-journal post. But afterthought, I think, man, maybe I should have tried this, you know, this tool, or maybe this would have worked better here. But I think one of the things for me is just in the moment when there's some conflict going on, whether it's between me and somebody else, or whether it's between, you know, members of the team, for me, the awareness is saying, what do I really want here, and then how do I... am I being helpful, or am I hurting the situation? That's something that, you know, I saw a couple of times last week where, you know, how can I be most helpful in this situation? And you know, and sometimes as a leader, it's not to just jump in and give the answer or give the, you know, make the decision. And so I don't think it's not really something I struggle with, but it's always better, you know, looking back to, you know, to kind of game film and say, what tools were available? What maybe could I have used? And, but the awareness part of it is something that's coming more natural, and I think that's part of the Sagan, you know, using the Sagan tools of really, you know, what's the outcome I want, and how can I be most helpful here? And sometimes,
yeah. Think about, like, just even before this whole Sagan thing showed up, right? When you were in conflict, were you ever even remotely thinking about that frame?
You know, I think I was. That's something that, but having the, you know, the consistent verbiage and, you know, it really helped. And I think that's something I'm becoming more comfortable with. But this is, it clears up the framework, you know, and what I want to do to get better is, you know, when I can really, you know, picture that toolbox in my, you know, what, you know, how am I going to heat it up or cool it down? How am I going to, you know, how am I going to move forward and process through the situation?
How many of these events are random, kind of spur of the moment versus how many of them are, I've got to have a conversation with this person about this?
Well, a lot of times that upstairs, because it's such an open environment, there's little conflict going on. And
when you're looking to jump in and address it, are you jumping in right in the moment trying to solve it, or are you saying, hey, you know, let me make a note, I'll get with this person in 30 minutes, an hour, next tomorrow, or whatever.
So the natural instinct is to kind of jump in,
mm-hmm.
and what I've been practicing is to listen, or even listen from a distance,
mm-hmm.
and then circle back and kind of get perspective, try to establish, is this something I really should be getting involved with, or should I just let it play out, you know, and what's the... You know, but I think that's something, we get a great opportunity to do that upstairs because it's so open and there's always, you know, between CEOs, between CEO finance, between, you know, one of the finance myself, when you come in and then, you know, so there's all these, you know, and, yeah, but getting, and I think my I guess where I want to get it right so that my team around me can use as an example and learn from it and help doing it. So I'm always wary of, you know, I don't want to become this person. I don't want to jump in and, you know, decide I really want to be a good example to the team. And so, but figuring out in the moment, all right, which tool should I use?
The thing that I see is where I do the worst job and where I do better is if I don't plan to use it. Like, if I have an issue I need to address with someone, a lot of times I'll go in, they're all in my phone, my calendar's in my phone. And so what I'll do is I'll say, okay, meeting with Jeremy. I'll open up that and I'll write down one or two tools that I says, okay, I'm going to use this tool and this tool during this meeting with Jeremy or this conversation with Jeremy and plug that in. And then I'll go in and says, okay, how would I use that tool? When I do it that way, it's much better. If I go in and don't have the tool in mind, it's kind of like, you know, just how you would use, you know, hammer and nails. If I'm looking to screw something in, I look at it as, what screwdriver do I need? Do I need a Phillips or flat? And I go in as opposed to just grabbing one and assuming I've got the right one. So just planning ahead, in conversations is great. If I don't do that, then I'm less effective and I tend to use the higher risk, which, you know, if you look at the action choice risk, I will end up usually doing more advocacy and deciding if it's unplanned. If it's planned, I'm using typically lower risk framing, inquiry, feedback tools. So that's just what I find has been helpful.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's this natural process of sort of of having it feel awkward first and slowly getting better at it that as adults we often forget, but as kids we tend to lean into. So, like, think about when you were first learning to throw a ball, the motion wasn't necessarily natural for you. If you were learning to write with a pen, cursive, whatever it is, right? I mean, kids tend to lean into that messiness and just go. and they eventually get better and they practice at getting better. But as adults, we have more at stake. We have vulnerability. We have maybe, you know, we don't want to actually show up as not skillful with our team, or the stakes are higher, so you can't afford to actually not get it right. You know, and you got to use judgment on when the situation is correct or not. But I would propose that perhaps it's going to feel awkward for a little while before it feels natural. And the important thing is the process. It's just leaning into the tools and using them, even if it is messy.
Hey guys, it's Vance. I mean, for me, I know I put a lot of emphasis on, you know, in the moment before I approach these situations, you know, to try to, you know, quickly within 30 seconds think about what tool I need to use. But I try to get away from that. I try to get away from just trying to be so perfect and just approach it with a natural feel on the situation. And then, you know, not being afraid of coming back to it later on and, you know, just framing up the message already delivered to somebody, and utilizing some more tools at that point and coming back to it again, like in a structured meeting, and saying, hey, I know we already discussed this. I just want to, you know, clarify, make sure this landed right, and just, you know, just make sure that everything that I went over with you guys or with the individual is what I thought and I framed it properly. So, I mean, I try to take a lot away from, you know, trying to be so perfect in that moment by just simply knowing that I can reapproach it again later on, and I do need to reapproach the situation later on just to make sure and clarify that my message was delivered as I intended.
Nice.
Peter, one of the things I think we have to all get comfortable with is the idea that conflict can be a positive thing. It's not always a negative thing, and I think that that's probably, at least my perception sometimes, has been that conflict is negative, and realistically, you can channel that energy, and you can use it as a positive. So, I mean, just using some of the techniques that we've already established, using inquiry, and getting a good understanding of where people are at, I think you can bring about productive conflict by just asking a lot of questions and making sure that everybody has ultimate clarity. A lot of times, we've seen it in purchasing previously where there's, you know, a disconnect between, you know, purchasing and Steve and Jeff, and yeah, we've all been a part of it where we all are having the conversations, and if we would just meet and have discussions about, you know, what we're worried about, we'd be able to produce a lot more. So I think it's real important that all of us see conflict as really a potentially very positive thing and being okay with it.
You know, a really useful frame for that particular outcome, which is conflict can be positive. Typically when you have conflict, it's a sign that there's energy, and usually it means that, you know, our rule of thumb is that conflict is generally a sign that people care a lot about something, right? And what you're trying to do is surface that and help them process through what they actually care about and articulate it in a way that helps them get outcomes. And you're just facilitating that process of getting them through that. But ultimately, you should have a lot more red flags when someone shows up apathetic and doesn't care and there isn't conflict potentially, or there isn't that energy, right? And so if you just simply, like, view conflict as signals that there's care, there's deep care somewhere in there, and you're just trying to surface what that is, it helps. I think it helps to actually even help you figure out sort of what approach to take. Because the opening question is, what is it that you really want? What do you care about here? Why do you have so much energy around this?
I like that perspective, Rube, that, you know, that conflict is energy. somebody cares about something, and then just it really kind of, you know, makes it easier to really visualize how we're going to bring this to the surface, because you're right, using that energy in a positive way, use the right tools, at least you've got somebody who cares about something. At least you've got somebody that, you know, is probably, you know, passionate and willing to work. I like the perspective. Count them down and then try to tune them up.
Yeah.
Sure.
Tuning up is...
takes a lot.
Oh, man, that's hard work. Turning down is more just redirecting.
So with respect to sort of leading conflict and working through conflict, are there any specific tools you guys want to jump into? You know, and by the way, Jeremy, one of the things you had talked about was sort of having that moment of clarity or having that moment where you sort of are able to resettle before you jump in. And what we're talking about really is the recalibration practice, right? How do I stop, ground, find my center, understand what my frame is when I go into this, and then come in. And the hardest thing to do is when you're in the midst of a conflict to be able to ground and recenter. And it's one of the most valuable things. You know, as a potential practice, right? I don't want to assign this because it's hard to like predict when this is going to happen, but when you find yourself in the middle of a conflict, just trying, and again, even the saying the assignment out loud just totally negates how you would actually do this, but just trying to recalibrate in the middle of a conflict. If you can have that awareness, just say, you know what, I'm going to take a second, let me recenter, let me focus on my breathing, and then reapproach the conversation, just see what it does for you. It's kind of chicken or the egg, right? Because if you have the awareness to recenter and recalibrate in the middle of a conflict, then you wouldn't necessarily really need the assignment. But any tools or any specific things you want to go into a little bit deeper outside of just the recalibration, working through sort of the productive conflict side?
Yes, here again. I think the challenge that we face is, you know, Jeff and Steve are very good with asking clarifying questions and being very open, but I do feel that sometimes they don't get the responses out of us that we really feel. I'll just say with the buyers, and there's a lot of times where, you know, the buyers are asked questions, and I don't think that they're always as open as they want to be, and I don't know how we, you know, improve upon that, other than inquiry, but I think that's something that we definitely in the purchasing department have to work on and being more open. But I don't know how to help, you know, improve that process.
Yeah, well, so we have there's a few things kind of baked into what you were talking about. One of the things, though, that I think is specific is this notion of advocacy and framing versus inquiry and surfacing, and how do we just get better at that. One of the things we had in the binder materials, and there's a lot of materials, is just sentence stems to help you get through that, right? So what are some inquiry-type sentence stems? Give me an example of if you were wanting to inquire into a situation, what are some of the phrases or used?
Hey, Rube, it's Jeff. Before we, just an observation, I was just listening. I think Peter raised a specific example, and I think it, not to deflect it, you may want to come back to this, is the response of people is, I think, a function of the situation or almost the role that they currently feel in, if we use the drama triangle. You know, if somebody feels you know, persecuted as an example. They'll be in defensive mode, and it's often, you know, it's them when, even when you frame the right question, you often get the, you know, the huge reluctance to respond to the properly framed inquiry, because of the defensive mechanisms are raised. And, you know, so that's just one example. And I think that something that we might want to also, you know, explore is how do you break through the mindset of the person that's been promulgated by, you know, some interpretation of the drama triangle, because, you know, even with a well-framed question, you've got to first also overcome their reluctance to open up to you because they're in a certain frame of mind. You know, it's almost like if I speak, I'm damned if I do, and it's better to just remain quiet.
Yeah. That's actually really interesting, because you're getting at, you know, how do we empathize? How do we create trust to be able to surface that in the first place?
Yeah, because even if you've got the right articulated question, if the frame of mind is not right and you haven't built that trust and empathy, the person, it's highly unlikely they're going to respond, even with a well-framed question. Is there any coaching, any thoughts or expansions on that you could give?
Yeah, I mean, so everybody's got a little bit of a different style, but I'll give you an example of my style. When I'm faced with someone who just doesn't want to open up, doesn't want to talk because of whatever defensive nature they're in, my style is actually generally to call it out and heat it up. So if we use our productive conflict tools, I heat that up. And I actually put it on the table. I say, look, what I'm sensing, the story I'm telling myself, is this. You don't actually want to respond because there's something else going on, or you're not in the right frame of mind, or whatever. Is that even a fair, like, assessment, right? And it's very provisional, right? So the story I'm telling myself, I own it. This is my own interpretation of what's happening. I'm non-attributive. This is not a description of you, right? It's simply me making sense of the situation in front of me and asking for confirmation one way or another. Now, if I get confirmation that, yeah, I am not in the right frame of mind, then I have an opening, and I can actually choose that opening to either go a little deeper. Okay, well, let's talk about why that is, right, and to see if they'll engage even further. Another way to deal with it, though, is to simply say, okay, well, why don't we take a break from this and revisit it? And in that break, what I'm asking you to do is just think about how you might be able to get into the right frame of mind. Because this isn't going to go away. We have to discuss it. And I just need you to be open enough to engage me. Right now, that's not happening, so I'm going to give you some time. Right? And even, we rarely get spoken to that directly, generally speaking. Or if we are, we're too emotionally tangled up to even really hear it, right? And so what I find is that using that methodology, I get just enough push and just enough trust that I'm not actually after an alternative motive. I'm not trying to fix things. I'm trying to listen. You know, go back to the trust formula, right? Reliability, credibility, empathy, all over self-orientation. And generally speaking, people get caught up and can't get past the empathy and the self-orientation part. And empathy, broken down, at the end of the day, is really about intimacy and transparency. So in that conversation, when I engage, I'm trying to be as transparent as possible and trying to communicate a level of empathy for what they're going through. But there's a lot of tools you guys have in your kit to help you with that. And sometimes the best thing is to do nothing. Just let it be. You're unlikely to get outcomes you want if you're dragging people along. Any reactions to, I spoke for a little while there, but any reactions to that? You guys are astounded by my methodology.
No, I think from a personal perspective, I think what you articulated is absolutely spot on, and I think it's something that we can practice to really engage, begin to get at and open people up when there is that that closure, and then you can move on with inquiry and well-framed questions.
It's interesting. As I think about what I just said, and as we're having this dialogue, we as leaders have some responsibility to own the outcomes of everything around us, right? And not be attached to those outcomes, but to own them. And so if someone's defensive around us, the question that comes to my mind is, what have I done to promote this defensiveness? What am I doing to contribute to the fact that this person thinks that they should show up defensive around me? Even just asking that question, I feel opens you up to a lot of different things in terms of how you can actually approach a person. I appreciate the redirect, Jeff. It's an interesting topic. I mean, does anybody have any experience with sort of having to engage someone who doesn't want to engage, or breaking through that initial layer of defensiveness to actually get to the marrow underneath?
I can talk about a time even just last week where, I was in the other role where I was, I came out of the Tuesday meeting feeling sort of like a victim, being persecuted, and I could feel myself sort of shutting down, and I didn't really want to go there, but just kind of absorbed what was going on, tried to, keep myself in the right frame of mind. Then, probably 20 minutes later, Jeff kind of engaged me and started talking about rugby. Or I don't even something else, and
some bullshit,
and I said, Jeff, I know what the fuck you're trying to do to me right now, but it worked, and it was a simple thing that just engaged me enough to kind of say, all right, I've separated myself from the situation, I've got my mind right now, I can, and I'm talking from the other's perspective. I know Jeff could sense that I was, either shutting down or, whatever, coming out in the wrong frame of mind. And so, and I knew he was using his Jedi mind tricks on me a little bit, but it allowed me to take a breath, think about something else for 30 seconds, and then redirect where I wanted to be, come back and kind of feel like I could, attack what the issues were. And so, it doesn't have to be, it really could be something as simple as that, but I think Jeff was able to recognize that I was not in the right frame of mind, and he probably sensed that we weren't going to get the outcome until I changed that frame of mind. So it was nice to experience that from the other, the other side, and me being the person, that was kind of my head in the wrong spot, and then, kind of changed direction. So thanks, Jeff.
Nice. It's interesting because a practice that I aspire to, and I'm not always good at it because, again, when we're in the moment, we're rested, and you can attest to this, Jeremy, is that you're not really thinking of all these tools available to you, and you're not really thinking about the awareness of trying to find a different path in the moment. Sometimes you are, sometimes you aren't, right? But we as leaders, if we're seeing it happen, we can call it out. Jeremy, I'm noticing you're shutting down. It's just me noticing that. And I don't want you to shut down. I want you to stay engaged. So if you need a timeout, if you need to sort of recalibrate, whatever needs to happen for you to not have that happen, take that time. I'm just putting it on the table. But even my own awareness in the moment of, guys, I'm shutting down. I'm getting triggered. You got to have awareness. We talked about awareness earlier today, right? And how awareness brings choices. If you can get aware of your triggers, and this is why game filming and journaling, all these practices, they're just trying to help you figure out what your triggers are. Because over time, you'll find consistency in them. And if you have that consistency and you know what they are, you actually have the ability to be self-aware in the moment and pull away from the trigger.
Rube, I think, and this, I could be way off on this, but, you know, to me, the thing that was important to me was that Jeff sensed where I was frustrated, not in the right frame of mind or anything else, and did something that he wouldn't have normally done. To me, that was empathy. He understood. He's kind of showing, look, I want to help. And Jeff, don't correct me if I'm wrong, but it worked to, you know, because I, you know, yeah, I mean, calling somebody out saying you're shutting down or anything like that, that I think that's a little bit more risky way in this situation when it worked for me to kind of get back on track. And I think sometimes something as simple as, I don't know if it's a distraction or, you know, it's just a technique to say, look, I see you're frustrated. I see you're shutting down. I care about you. I know I want the best situation or I want the best outcome here, and I'm going to deliberately act, you know, in a way that's going to help us get through it was, you know, and so to me the learning was, you know, I can use that with my team. I can use that with other situations. When I see somebody who's maybe not got their heads in the game or maybe, you know, being a little distracted out of the game, on the other side, what's my responsibility to help bring them back in and get the desired outcome?
Yeah.
But I would,
that's fair. I appreciate the riskiness of it. Go ahead.
Hey, Jeremy, it's Jeff. I think that what Rupe is proposing, it's a nice way when you do it privately with the individual, to get practice into, you know, breaking through in that moment. It's I don't think there's a risk in that articulation, and it gives you a very grounded methodology to say, hey, look, when I see that happening, I'm going to use those words to broach it. I think you'll find that it is successful. And I think to, you know, come back to a point earlier, you know, one of the things, I'm extremely impatient and I've got a very short temper, and one of the things that I have had to, you know, and I'm still not that good at it and I still forget, but, you know, the work on not becoming part of the point that Rupe made earlier, particularly if there's a sort of a three-way or multi-way discussion, to try and, you know, as you get more and more sucked into it, think, hold on, you almost pinch yourself to step back and go silent for a minute or two while you recalibrate, and then think about, okay, how can I now become a catalyst and facilitator of the right outcome as opposed to a contributor to the, you know, the turmoil and the debate. And that's often very difficult, but the more you can become sort of conscious and aware of that, you know, the more powerful it can become. And, and you know, that's something that I'm trying to practice a lot more, particularly over recent years.
Rube, it's Steve. You know, I was thinking what might be a helpful tool is the performance journaling.
Yeah.
Where we can, they want to introduce that, and I can take ownership of, if you want to email it out, I can work with the group a little bit about how to apply that tool.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I'll post it to the journal with just a very brief intro, but if you want to bring color to it, and I know you used it in the past quite a bit, and if it, you know, helping kind of share the wins would be really ideal. So I will definitely get that out there.
Thank you. And when will you do that? Committed action?
Nice. I will do that today before 5 p.m.
Very good.
I like it. Mutual accountability. It's inescapable. This is great, guys. By the way, I'm experiencing you guys and this team far more open than I think I've seen you guys in a while. And when I say open, I mean, this is the right kind of open. There's an authenticity and a genuine care that's even palpable over the phone. So I appreciate what's happening in the moment with you guys.
We're all drinking mimosas and Bloody Marys, so that's what you're missing.
Yes. That's
open
right.
Up.
Hey, Roop, something that Jeremy said earlier, which we kind of missed, I think it's intuitive, but often missed, and is very powerful, is Jeremy said, talked about thinking about what the desired outcome is and really, really being aware of that when you go into these, you know, when you've got time, you step back, you thought about the tools you're going to use. But the key, for me, the key question, and it was what Jeremy said, is, you know, what do I really want out of this situation? You know, because rarely is you can have a desire. You could say your desired outcome is, I'm going to change this person, but that's probably not a practical desired outcome. But, you know, what's my practical desired outcome of this interaction, this management of conflict that is a practical, you know, step forward? And I think that for me is, you know, if we all did that, then we would, you know, we can then, it leads to thinking about tools and you know, techniques to use to achieve that desired outcome.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the question, what is it that I want, or as you put it, what is my sort of desired practical outcome, is like a Jedi move, right? Because it puts you in the frame of creating as opposed to getting sucked into energy. Of a conflict that is easy to get sucked into. And this qualifier of practical is important, right? Because it at least gives you a frame for how to operate within the moment and within the bounds of what you're given. Because you're not always given a very good lie at the ball. Sometimes what I really want is a conflict to just stop, and it may not. It may not be practical for it to stop given the two bodies that I'm working with or the two people I'm working with or whoever it is. And I, you know, have to come to that realization. And that qualifier, that's a hard qualifier to get right, but it's an important one. It's a good dialogue, guys. We're getting into the nuances, right? And we told you at the beginning of advanced execution, part of the hurdle is just getting familiar with everything and then focusing in on a few of those things to then get the nuances of it. And we're in the nuances of conflict and productive conflict and how it interrelates to really everything else we've talked about throughout the program. Anything else up for you guys?
Well, I have a question.
Yep.
I'm doing a lot of absorbing today. So when you're going into to these situations where productive conflict and you're going to put it out on the table, do you want to communicate what your desired outcome is for this, or should you just manage and guide the one-on-one interaction to what you want the desired outcome? How do you get there, either communicate it or guide to it?
I think it really depends, right? I mean, some styles work better for some people than others, right? The risk that you have with the desired outcome and stating it up front, I personally, by the way, I'm more of a tell people where you're going kind of guy. I mean, like, that's just my style. Here's what I want. But sometimes that can feel like too much advocacy, right? I haven't even listened to what the other person has to say before I start to, like, put my wants out there. And so I can see an argument for both in terms of how you would approach it. And really, it depends on who's on the other side of it.
Yeah,
are they going to react well to it? Go ahead.
I think it's kind of stated as, and, you know, what's the orientation of if they're a victim, and
right.
you're, and I think I can see if you're stating your desired outcome, they would interpret that as, well, you know, why are you, what about me, right?
Right.
Where if they're in a different orientation, it's, you know, they're in the role of a challenger or, you know, they're in the empowerment dynamic, you might can say, hey, here's the, so victim, you may say, what is your desired outcome versus here's my desired outcome. I think it's just awareness of what's the self-orientation of the individual I'm talking to.
And as you get deeper and deeper in these practices, it's rarely a black and white answer. There's a lot of gray in here that you have to manage in the moment.
50 shades of gray. Right up your alley.
That's what I heard.
One thing we know is that when dealing with people, a prescriptive, you know, a script of some sort, it rarely works. And you know, you have to test and step back and retest and reset and test. And, you know, it's about develop. And the more you practice this, the more agile on your feet you can become, because, you know, human interaction is about, you know, probing and then stepping back and then readjusting. And, you know, and it's the more you can practice, the more agile you can become and the more adaptive you can become in the real time while being clear about what your objective is. So, I think, you know, there's melts are queer as folk, and so you know, we have to recognize we're dealing with people, not computers, you know. So you know, it be very, very aware of that, because I think it can become clumsy if you just sort of, you know, here's what the Stegan manual says, here I go, you know, down this path, like a railway track, you know. It can become very clumsy and disruptive to people if you're not very in tune with the feedback and signals you're receiving.
Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah, guys, I really appreciate it. You know, I think we went into a lot of really different directions that you could actually continue to go deep on. So I certainly appreciate the willingness to sort of lean into that. A little less structure than usual for our calls. As a matter of scheduling, I'm looking at our schedule over the next several weeks. I don't know if you have a coaching session next week or not.
We have one on the 14th with Jay.
Yep. And then I think there's another break on the week of the 21st of October, because the next teleclass call I have is actually the 28th. Yeah. And that's because of shifting the Q4 day. So it'll be a little bit of time before we get together. So the e-journal will be important for sort of reinforcing the lessons and all of that, and I can certainly appreciate the timeliness of y'all's recommitment to it. So.
14th and 28th, so we only have two.
Yep.
And then you got the third of November is the all-day class.
So there's no call next week?
Week and no call on the 21st.
Okay. Yeah, Jay and I will send out an email with sort of what the next month looks like, because it's a little less regular than we've traditionally had it.
Super. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll send it out today. All right, guys. Well, thank you again for the call. Appreciate the openness and the sharing. So.
Thanks, Ruth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take care.
Bye, guys.